Hey, it's the Popmatic Podcast for December 10th, 2014. This episode, Muzak. We're going to tell you about the best corporate audio widgets for you and your company.
Woohoo! Ooh.
No, for serious, it's the best music of the year episode. And do you guys know why Nashville is called Music City? It's a rhetorical question. You guys can look it up. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mike.
Crystal.
Sarah.
Sarah?
Who's Sarah? What's Ooh. That?
Sarah, is this your first time on the podcast?
It is.
Wow. Many of your colleagues have been on the podcast before. And what do you do at the library?
I work in reference and teens.
Awesome. Today is our music episode, and I switched out two Bills and a Jeremy for one Sarah.
That's a good trade. That's a good trade.
But I
met Mystery Other Bill.
I got to say that the person that I'm most curious about their picks today is Mike, because you have been the most prickly and grumpy about the library not having what you want.
What can I say? And I've got an odd music taste.
So today should be super fun. Okay, you've waited long enough. We're going to do this the same way we did the books episode, which is we each are going to do our number three.
Number three.
And then our number two.
Number two.
No poop jokes. We did it the whole way through the last episode with no poop jokes. So keep
it would
it
have
that
been a two-hour episode.
That's half
if we
my
got
score right there.
Scratch that off. Everybody poops. I read the book.
The Poopmatics. The Poopmatic Podcast. We missed our calling.
Rewind. I'm just getting it out of the way.
Today, diaries.
We probably have more.
What laxatives are really good this week?
Pow!
That's a different podcast. And then we'll all do our number one.
Number one!
And then maybe what's tickling our fancy if we have time. And if we don't, I'll just cut that line. So we're going to go in alphabetical order because we're librarians. Amanda, your number three music pick, best music of the year.
Best music.
Number three.
Okay, now I'm amazed that all my picks actually came out in 2014, but I had a hard time picking just three, and so this one kind of came in and out of my pick, but I am going to land on Pulses by Carmen. Carmen is actually two people. It's not a person. It's Amy Renee Heidemann and Nick Noonan, and they are this, for lack of a better term, hip-hop duo. They actually got famous in 2010, 2011 for doing famous covers on YouTube, and they did a really cool one of CeeLo's FU. It's really jazzy, and it's awesome. And so then because of those, they got signed to Epic in 2011 and put out an EP, just a short release in 2012, which is where I first learned about them, with their single Broken Hearted. And so I thought, listen, these guys are kind of cool. They've got kind of a fun beat going. But then in 2014, in March, they released their debut album, Pulses, which I don't think I realized it was their first album because they'd had that little EP before. And you've probably heard the song Acapella. That was their lead single off that. But my favorite song is Pulse.
I wanna make your heart beat. I love it when it beats for me, yeah. I wanna make your heart beat. I love it when it beats for me, yeah. I wanna raise pulses. La chica with the mostest. Not in the mood for the average Josephs. Coming unglued, baby, this is explosive. I wanna raise pulses. I'm coming for your rhythm. I'm here to wake you up.
They're not really lyrical or melodic, but they're really rhythmic. It's funny because in the YouTube cover, she does a lot more singing than in the songs. She does a lot more rapping, which I think was a request from fans, which I'm not sure that would have been my request, but it does work out well. And I also think that Pulses as an album is really well put together. It's not just, hey, there's two really cool songs and then 9 minutes or, you know, 30 minutes of junk. So, I mean, it really is. I like most of the songs as they come through. The duo actually left Epic Records in the middle of 2014. They had a dispute and they've kind of put out some stuff independently. So it will be interesting to see where they go from here. But I will say the library has all of their music available for download on Regal. So that was Pulses by Carmen.
All right. So my number three is an artist that I've spent a lot of time listening to this year. though I'm not going to mention anything that specifically that came out this year. They have had stuff come out this year that you have probably heard. So I'm talking about the film composer Cliff Martinez, and I actually teased this in the last episode if you listened very closely. So in the last few years, he's scored two of my favorite movies, Spring Breakers and Only God Forgives. And it's funny because those are two like totally over-the-top violent movies, that the kind of movies I usually don't like. But I love those two movies, and he did the music for both. So the library has those in multiple formats. He's known for his collaborations with director Nicholas Wending Refn, and he scored the movie Drive. And Drive is the quietest, slowest car movie ever made. And the movie is all about restraint, and so is the score. I love it. It's ambient. There's just a lot of like synthesizer tones. And there's just this one recurring theme. It's just this like very brown, low note that surges up. And it mimicked the revving of a car engine when you slam the gas. And there's really only one car scene, you know, where Ryan Gosling actually slams the gas pedal. So I'm just going to give you that one little note. So it's like when you slam the gas, but it's in a dream or in the back of your head, or, you know, like what revving the gas would sound like in your unconscious, or maybe if you were tied up muffled in the trunk of the car. So, but more recent movies that he's done, Only God Forgives, he worked with all the Thai artists that were involved with that movie, including the actors. They do some of the singing on the movie. With Spring Breakers, the director actually wanted to use like a piece of stock classical music for the penultimate scene, the scene that has all three elements of Spring Breakers, bikini, ski mask, and Uzi. So the scene that has all three in one. The director was like, oh, no, you don't have to do any cues for that scene because I have a piece of music I'm going to use. But Martinez was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to write what I want and just give it to him and be like, eh. And so they actually used Martinez's music. Before they started, the other person that wrote music that was used in the score for Spring Breakers was Skrillex. And Martinez actually used Skrillex's melodies. He used that as his basis for the score. You've probably heard his music before. He's also known for his collaborations with Steven Soderbergh, and he actually scored his first movie, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. He scored the Solaris remake, and a lot of this got cut, but we had talked about on the podcast that if there's ever a movie that you should just turn off the visuals and just sit in your living room and listen to the music, it's that one. He did some more, more popular stuff, The Lincoln Lawyer, and then also this year, The Normal Heart, the series on HBO that a lot of you might have seen. And Mike, you might be interested, he's also scoring Far Cry 4. When it comes out. Now, it lists that at IMDb, so he probably has actually scored a lot more video games than
came out last week. Instant correction.
Cool. I like that. So, the film scores of Cliff Martinez, which the library has in many different formats. Crystal.
All right. My number three choice for favorite album that I've listened to or discovered this year came to me by way of a concert I went to back in February, which gives me a perfect opportunity to stress. It's always a great idea to arrive on time to experience the opening act because sometimes they're better than the headliner. So it was on that February night at the Mercy Lounge I discovered Frankie Rose, who I later found out was a singer-songwriter out of Brooklyn. Now, Rose was wearing a vintage Cure t-shirt. Of course, if you know me, that immediately grabbed my attention. When she and her band kicked into their first song, I was hooked. So I went back to the library the next day, and I started looking around to see if we had any of her music. Well, I found some albums on Freegal. And the one that I absolutely love was released in 2012, and it's called, wait for the pop culture irony, Interstellar. That's right. Christopher Nolan surely stole Rose's album title for his latest film. So, how to describe Frankie Rose's Interstellar? Deep lyrics, dreamy vocals, driving rhythms, and synth sounds as never-ending as the universe. No disrespect to composer Hans Zimmer, who scored Chris Nolan's Interstellar, but I think Matt McConaughey and Anne Hathaway should have blasted off into space to Rose's title track of Interstellar.
Thank you.
Roses, Interstellar, released in 2012 on Slumberland Records, is available for download through Freegal. All right, Mike, it's number three to you.
Well, this should be good times because I don't listen to radio, I don't go to concerts, and I don't read music criticism. So my taste in music's a little weird.
Dun, dun, dun. Like Jingle Bell.
Oh, it took so long for me to find stuff that we have. And
if you wanted the boring list, you should listen to a different podcast.
That's right.
I'm sure NPR will have many boring lists.
This week in NPR Interstitials, some jazz tune. So last year I went on a whim and I actually did go to a concert. Woo, down to Atlanta. Had a really good time. I was like, oh, this is what concerts are, because the previous few concerts I got to were kind of, why am I here standing up for 3 hours getting sweat on by other people? It's gross. So I was like, ooh, I should try more of this concert thing. And I live in Music City. I'll see if there's like a band I like and see if they come here. So I went to a Beats Antique show at the Marathon Music Works. Beats Antique is a kind of like belly dancing / EDM band. There's an actual like belly dancer who gets on stage named Zoe. And she wears like this big headdress. And she goes and like does this costume change in between songs.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is awesome. And like they had this like animated like movies behind like the musicians kind of going the whole time. And like there was, you know, at one point Zoe came out with this big drum set. Then there was other dancers, and I was like, oh, this is really neat. This is what I guess modern music is. We had to have a really good stage show because everybody pirates the music. I mean, buys the music legally. I had a really good time gyrating to their world music influence beats. We have their stuff on Hoopla and Freegal. And my favorite tune of theirs, which I listen to multiple times a day, every day for a couple months, called Veil of Tears, is on the CD. A Thousand Faces Act One is on Hoopla. It is an energetic dance of delight. In the Hall of the Mountain King kind of vibe, where it starts slow and ends really fast, which I thought was really cool, but it sounds like very kind of Middle Eastern. Do you have Sarah?
Well, I did a whole lot of debating between my three. I already knew what my number one was going to be. It was hands down, because I've seen them twice this year, and I thought, okay. My number three, though, I figured, since I'd get most of my music inspiration from Lightning 100, I'm just going to shout out to them. This band, I listened to their hit single, Cardiac Arrest, probably a million times on iTunes this year. Bad Sons. Their debut album is Language and Perspective. They're out of Southern California. I don't know. I love them because Cardiac Arrest is a very deep rock, hard rock kind of hit, but the rest of the album itself it's pretty alternative, and it's easygoing, easy to listen to. Losing my direction, turn me around. I've been just I like them a lot because they're very similar to Local Natives. They're another band out of Southern California. They're very similar to like the 1975. They're a new band of this year. And they're actually playing the Exit Inn in February, so I'm hoping I'll be able to get to see them then. Very like alternative, a little bit of pop, a little bit of synth. They're on Hoopla.
Number two.
Amanda.
Number two.
Who does number two work on? Sorry. That's been on the tip of my tongue.
Hey, you gotta throw out Austin Powers. I have talked about my number two pick before on the podcast, and I think that we've all geeked out over it a little bit. When I say that Weird Al has been popular since I was old enough to care, I doubt that I really have to go through and explain his brilliance. I could simply say things like Fat, Yoda, Like a Surgeon, not to mention more recent hits like Perform This Way or Amish Paradise, and everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. In 2014, the Master was back with a new album of fun tunes called Mandatory Fun. Come for the newest polka mashup, but you stay for great parodies like Word Crimes, based off of Blurred Lines. If you can't write in the proper way, if you don't know how to conjugate, maybe you flunked that class. Gonna familiar.
positions.
And Foil, which was based off of Royals. His original tunes do leave a little something to be desired. They didn't knock my socks off, but the others more than make up for them. I picked Mandatory Fun because it was fun and, you know, mandatory.
As a fan of Soviet art, I really enjoyed the cover of that record,
too. It's a very intimidating cover, yes.
It was very appropriate. I enjoyed it. So it's my time for number two. My number two is a record and an experience you can have via the library. Okay?
Ooh.
One of my favorite bands, The Knife, they actually broke up in 2014. Their last album was called Shaking the Habitual, and in 2014 they were touring, and they were doing, you know, get it, Shaking the Habitual? They were doing reworked versions of their entire back catalog, right? And they're like, well, this is awesome. We need to record this. So they put out this record called Shaken Up Versions that are like completely reworked versions of their songs that they were doing live. So here's a bit from the reimagining of The Bird taken from their Little Herd first album, The Knife. So in typical Knife fashion, the songs are like totally different. And if you remember the last time I was talking about The Knife, I was talking about the opera, like avant-garde electronic opera about Charles Darwin. They totally punked everyone with that, and that's great. But the album Shaking the Habitual was basically in the same vein, and everyone was like, where's the Knife that we know and love? The Knife that did the song Heartbeats, the Knife that made the album Silent Shout, which is like absolutely one of my Desert Island discs. I love that record. So, like, where's, like, the basically the intelligent, you know, techno-pop tunes? Where are they at? And Shaken Up Versions is basically that album. Like, they took their old songs and made them into pop songs again, I think maybe as throwing a bone to fans. I'm not sure, but it's excellent. And it is tracks from their whole career. And speaking of their whole career, the experience that I want to talk about is that often in Hoopla, you can find entire artist discographies, and you can binge listen the same way that you can binge watch a show, like in a streaming service on like Netflix or Hulu. So most of the Knife's discography is on Hoopla. So you can go back and listen to all those albums I talked about. You can hear the difference. You can hear the live show of the older albums. You can hear Shaken Up Versions. And this is the one thing, the trade-off. I think right now the library has like one Knife album on CD. And with Hoopla and Freegal, like we can have an entire discography. And it's never checked out. Sort of amazing. So my number two, Shaken Up Versions by The Knife. And binge listening, thanks to Hoopla.
A cutting recommendation. I can see the point.
I feel like I want to make a Mac the Knife joke, but I got nothing.
Have any of you heard of the band Fever Ray? Remember that band?
Rings a bell.
Sounds familiar, but...
So the Knife is actually a brother and sister pair. And I think when we did the Family Project episode, we talked about how we could never be in a band with our brother and sister. We would break up. Well, guess what? The Knife broke up. But the sister, she does solo work under the name Fever Ray, which a lot of people really, really love. So there's more work out there.
People like, I don't. Whatever.
I don't like people either. Crystal.
All right. My second choice for favorite album of the year is somewhat of a departure for me. But being a gal from Kentucky, I have to take note of artists hailing from the bluegrass state, which brought me to Sturgill Simpson. Now, from here on out, I'm going to call him Sturgill because it reminds me of my papaw Virgil. So Sturgill, like me, traveled a few hours down the interstate to wind up in Middle Tennessee. Sturgill has an authentic and strong country vocal style, yet he writes songs about topics that aren't really discussed in popular country music, like hallucinogenics and the ego and metaphysics. Yep, Sturgill is a deep thinker and a constant seeker who's been through some stuff. His 2014 album, Metamodern Sounds in Country Music, is country if you consider the traditional instrumentation and production. But this is a country album that deadheads can appreciate. That's right, get out your lava lamp. Now, my favorite track isn't one of the trippy ones. He covered one of my all-time favorite pop songs from 1988, The Promise by a little-known band, When in Rome.
I'm sorry, but I'm just thinking of rhymes to say. I know they don't sound the way you planned them to be. If you wait around, I'll make you fall for me. I promise, I promise you I will.
Metamodern Sounds is available for checkout on CD. All right, Mike, number two.
Oh. I just want to say real quick, if your name is Sturgill, you have to be a country singer. I mean, that's what your path is going to lead you to. You're not going to be like an accountant. Maybe a truck driver, but...
Maybe like
Professor Sturgill.
Like a 1920s baseball player.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, with the big flowing mustache.
All right, Mike, what's your number two choice of the year?
Number two. So earlier this year, around January time, I rewatched Kill Bill Volume 1 in shiny Blu-ray. I was floating on a cloud of wonderful violence-induced bliss. I decided to float on that cloud down to the CD warehouse to buy the Blu-ray of Volume 2, because I was like, you know, it's been about 10 years, maybe Volume 2 is good now. Spoiler alert, it's not. But whilst there, I saw for $5 Motorhead's CD of 1916. Yeah. All right. All I knew about 1916 is that it's the album Going to Brazil on it, and it had a really awesome cover. Well, I'm here to say this whole CD is awesome. Yeah, late 80s, early 90s Motorhead can't be beat. Although, I mean, you could make the case that much like AC/DC, they keep making the same song over and over. But don't make that case.
Just ignore that argument.
I won't mention Hawkwind either. Okay.
Yeah, anyway, you know. You can download the CD in its entirety on Freegal. Might I suggest Ramones, Lenny's remake of a Ramones song. It's a minute and a half of bone-crunching awesome that I had on infinite repeat in my car for quite a while. It's like 2 hours of listening to the same song that's only a minute and a half. Life is good. What do you got, Sarah?
So number two, it went back and forth between two bands that are very similar because they're both got the new wave kind of mix in the electronic beats and all that stuff. So it was going to be Fantagram, but I did not listen to them nearly as much as I listened to the Broken Bells new album this year, which came out, I think, around January. It's after the disco. Best song, of course, that I think I played 1,000 times was Holding On for Life. Every time I went running, it pushes you. But after the disco, the album song is pretty good, and then Medicine's kind of a little bit more chill, so it's very psychedelic. You'll have a good time if you listen to this album, but a good time, a clean good time. The reason why I love them is because it's a collaboration between James Mercer and Brian Burton.
The Shins,
that's right. The Shins is another all-time favorite. I think I could listen to Simple Song on repeat all the time. And then Brian Burton, of course, he's Danger Mouse from Gnarls Barkley, so his talent's in there as well. It was also recorded with a 17-piece Angel City String Orchestra and 4-piece choir, so it's a little bit crazy, a little bit of everything mixed into that album. Like I said, it's similar to Fantagram. Future Islands, if you like them. The Arcade Fire.
Spoiler alert!
Great collaboration, a little bit of 70s, a little bit of 80s mixed in there if you like to go a little retro. We've got their first album. I think it's self-titled Broken Bells. We've actually physically got it at the library, but you can find After the Disco and Broken Bells and a few of their other EPs on Freegal.
Number one!
We made it.
Oh.
Number one
with a bullet.
With a bullet.
Wait, why with a bullet?
This is cool.
Because number one makes a bullet, you know?
Oh.
I could say, what is the loneliest number?
But not today. One is the best number.
Because there's like five of us.
You do math like I do. Okay, number one. My pick is kind of, I think Sarah said earlier that hers is not even close about what your number one album is, mm-hmm. and that's how mine is too. Like, as soon as Brian said this, I'm like, I know what my number one album is. It kind of snuck up on me, though. Like, I have always respected Pharrell Williams, but I've never really been in love with his music. Like, when he was with the Neptunes or NERD, it wasn't really something that I listened to all the time. I knew he was a great producer. He's won a bunch of Grammys for producing other people's music. And then he came out this year with the Happy song that was part of the Despicable Me soundtrack, and I liked it. It was catchy. But again, it wasn't in heavy rotation on my theoretical turntable. It really wasn't until the whole album Girl came out that the first time I listened to it, I just kind of went, whoa, this is just it's just really well written. It's really tight. It's really well produced, which makes sense because he's a producer. It is a little bit shocking that this is only his second solo album. Like I said, he's been involved with a bunch of other projects, but this is his second release just as Pharrell. Again, the album as a whole is just completely awesome. But if I have to pick favorite songs, I would say that Brand New, the second song on the CD with Justin Timberlake, is awesome.
My love, ooh, my love, a winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. I thought about what I wanted, and you were on my list. Remember where I was, in the desert with no love, no cactuses, just us.
It's really good. Like, if you say you have to walk across a bridge in Nashville, it's very peppy and it gets you across the bridge faster. I've used that a lot for that. And then he also has one called Lost Queen that is, I don't want to say it's African inspired, but it's a little bit more tribal in its rhythm. It's just kind of a fun story. So I would say that most people have heard Happy on the radio. It's kind of been everywhere this year. And if you can even tolerate that song, you need to check out the whole album. Because it gets so much better from there. And surprise, surprise, it's also on Freegal.
Awesome sauce. So some context, again, for like my number one pick. We've talked a lot this year about flux in the music industry.
In the music industry?
Flux.
Flux. I said flux, like a seagull.
Yeah, or flux.
I was like,
we've talked a lot this year about flux in the music industry.
How flock of seagulls.
We've talked about how YouTube is the new radio. How everything is on Spotify, unless you're rich enough to not have to use Spotify, right?
Yeah.
Tay-tay.
We've talked about how you can get entire discographies at the library, right? You can get 100 CDs at a time at the Woo-hoo. Library if you want. And ironically, vinyl sales continue to go up. Even though there's all this music available. So with this in mind, I thought it would be okay to mention something the library doesn't have, but you can get for free anywhere on the internet, and that's Mickey Blanco's new mixtape, Gay Dog Food. If you don't know Mickey Blanco, he's a rapper, but I would say he's as much of a concept artist as a rapper. You might notice that this is the music that I like. If you require metadata, you could say that he's a concept artist. So Mickey Blanco is very gender fluid. You know, I'm referring to him as he, but it just depends on the hour of the day or the music video. Gay Dog Food is a jumble of grimy techno, samples from 90s TV shows, and Blanco half shouting, half rapping. Someone tweeted that it sounds like a mashup of Skinny Puppy, Gavin Friday, with Marilyn Manson rapping over the top, and that's what it sounds like. And it was actually really hard for me to pick a track that was safe for work. I mean, seriously, it was like, there was either like the N-word or a curse word, like every 10 seconds. So here's just a mashup of a bunch of the songs together.
That's what I always think sometimes. Like, what the fuck does a brain fart smell like? I don't know.
And that's actually pretty much what listening to the record feels like. The songs start and stop suddenly. You think there's going to be a song and then it stops. But then, like, the samples from the TV shows will go on for really long. There's like a 9-minute clip from Moesha about someone being disinvited to the dance because she gets pregnant. And then there's also these like times when he raps, the vocal style is like very, very deliberate. It's intentionally like not rapping. It's sort of like the tone of a celebrity that gets caught by paparazzi and then loses their temper and goes off and then gets linked to the internet. Or the way that maybe like your friend's getting drunk in a bar and getting really loud and rowdy and everyone's looking at them, but they don't know yet. So he's like deliberately has this tone sort of the whole way through the record. And in a way, it kind of reminds me of like a hip hop version of Iggy Pop's The Idiot. Like the beats are actually kind of like mid-tempo and slow. Like it's a difficult record, very experimental. And one of the things that I think that some critics don't get about it is that this is intentional. This is a concept album about getting famous and losing your mind, or getting famous and trying not to lose your mind. And it also reminds me of really early industrial records. Before industrial meant dance music, before industrial meant heavy metal music, difficult experimental rock and roll, even though this is a hip hop record and he like sort of raps. Now, if this doesn't appeal to you, one of his earlier mixtapes, Cosmic Angel Illuminati Princess, is amazing. It is the record that I've listened to more than any other in the last few years, and it's still downloadable for free. Check it out, Gay Dog Food by Mickey Blanco. And one of the reasons why it's called Gay Dog Food is instead of doing sort of normal hip-hop or club music, he intentionally was like, I'm going to make an ugly, difficult, noisy record, and I'm not going to be like a glamorous drag queen. Like, this is going to be like street and grimy and rough and unhinged. So it's called it Gay Dog Food. And even though it's downloadable everywhere right now, the only physical formats you can get it in is vinyl and cassette.
Cassette.
Wow. What is that?
You can get that with the awesome Mix Volume 1, which came out in cassette recently.
Crystal, number one.
Number one. So if you've listened to this podcast, you won't be surprised that I picked Future Islands 2014 album Singles as my favorite album of the year. I've been obsessively listening and watching concert videos on YouTube since I discovered them from their performance on David Letterman. This band has the perfect combination of melody, rhythm, and heart, and I'm really happy that they're gaining the notoriety that they deserve. Now, I mentioned my papaw Virgil earlier. Well, here's a Future Islands song that I would like to dedicate to him. It's called A Song for Our Grandfathers. Get to see Future Islands in February when they play a show in Atlanta, and I'm sure that will tickle my fancy for most of 2015. Singles is available for checkout on CD. All right, Mike, it's number one time.
I picked a single song because, yeah, we mentioned on a previous podcast that I'm one of those who only will pick one or two songs from an album and ignore the rest. I also mentioned this podcast recently how psyched I was to see The Rage 2. In retrospect, I think I was getting myself way too excited. I don't think any movie could have been as good as I was hoping for. Oh well. But for the month or two that I was super duper excited and would drink too much coffee in the morning, I would alternate trailers and clips to The Rage 2 with a song I heard briefly on another podcast. The song is called Rocksteady by a band called the Bloody Beetroots. EDM kind of thing, slash, and then I'm totally blanking on whatever genre Skrillex does. Oh, dubstep. Yeah. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Dubstep. We're hip it. We're with it. We know what dubstep is.
EDM step.
The two pretty cool. Step.
That's right. The Texas two-step.
That'd be awesome.
In general, I tend to like really, really fast songs. If you could picture like a fist fight or a sword battle punctuating that every beat, then that's the kind of song that I dig. That's right. I like, you know, I kind of like dancing in my seat. This tune is perfect for that sort of thing. Don't buy the album version because it's completely different than the single version, and I'm out $10 because I thought it'd be the same, so I had to buy the album and the single. And the single's available through Regal. Good times, Rocksteady. We get there. For number one.
Number one. So yeah, I did say that it was kind of a no-brainer. Before I say the name of them, I'll say I want to drop another hint for a band that I would have picked if they had a new album this year, but I wanted to kind of keep it within 2014. I discovered this band thanks to Portugal the Man. If you don't know who they are, you should. They're amazing. I'm kind of confused why they haven't blown up on the scene yet. Evil Friends, I think, is their newest album that came out 2012 or 2013. I saw them at Cannery Ballroom, and then a friend managed to get us kind of snuck into Mercy Lounge after that concert, where Johnny Swim was playing. Now, again, if you don't know this band, you should. They were my number one just because they're a married couple. Amanda Sedano, she's the daughter of Donna Summer. Yeah, she's got a great voice, amazing voice. She's married to Abner Ramirez, and they're this amazing married couple that produced the most beautiful music you've ever heard. It's folk, a little bit of pop, a little bit of country. Now it's Nashville, you gotta get your country in there. And they released the album Diamonds this year, and they actually told a story when they played it live on the Green, because I've seen them twice this year. That's why I picked them. They told a little story of how Diamonds was written sort of as a slap to the face to someone that told them they weren't going to get famous. So the rest of the album, it's a mixture of a little bit of angst, a little bit of there's fun kind of dance music, but there's also a few of the slow hits like You and I. My favorite one's A Million Years. It's a great kind of love story, but
in a million years. Tell me, will they hear about us deep? Will any of these sparks we light catch a flame and burn through time? You are my story, my fame and my glory.
I mean, I'm not getting all sappy here at all. It's a really beautiful album, really well written by the two of them. They've been around, I think, since 2005. They met in Nashville, so that was the other reason why I picked Johnny Swim. I sort of wanted it to be a band from Nashville, from home. So, yeah, I definitely recommend them. If you just want a great album, they're similar to Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, if you're familiar with them. They're another local Nashville band from Belmont, I believe, another married couple. And the Civil Wars. Gotta love the Civil Wars. Sadly that they're not together anymore, but very similar to them, and they will always be my favorite. And you can find them, all their music, including their newest Christmas album, A Johnny Swim Christmas, on Frigo.
This is What's Tickling Our Fancy this week. Sarah, if you don't know, this is when we talk about things that are happening in pop culture that maybe the library doesn't have yet. Or maybe something in Nashville that's happening. Or maybe there's a viral video that the library can't get a viral video.
Maybe there's a hot dog you should go eat.
Yet.
There's a musical runner-up that didn't quite make the list.
I think that might be what's tickling my fancy because we have enough time. But Amanda.
Yes.
You have the privilege of starting.
We've spent a lot of time talking about other people's music, but I want to give a shout out to my music. So on Thursday, December 18th at noon here at the delightful Nashville Public Library, I will be playing Christmas music for you. So if you want to come down, it's at noon on the second floor landing, which is where the piano lives, and it's too heavy to move anywhere else. And my students, I have two music students that are going to be playing with me as well. So if you need some Christmas music in your life, feel free to come down on December 18th at noon, and I'm just going to tease you and say that Elvis might be in the building. I'm just going to throw that out there.
You know, speaking of Elvis being in the building, we teased that maybe Prince or Frank Zappa was going to be the special guest on this episode, and it was Sarah.
I couldn't make it.
So
Frank Zappa's dead.
So you are an eccentric polymath musical genius, right?
Sure.
All right, excellent. Okay, good. It's just as good. It's all right. It's just as good.
Thank you for not wearing the chaps.
Yeah, no problem. Left him at home.
Yeah.
So what was tickling my fancy? New Grimes record did not come out this year. That's disappointing. You might have read in the press that she was working on her album and scrapped it and started over. What's tickling my fancy, not in the realm of music, and I just want to give a shout out, is the book Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yeah, that's her name. I read about that this morning because it was one of the Amazon best science fiction books of the year that I had never heard of. And I was like, oh, never heard of it.
Yeah, Emily St. John Mandel. And it's an awesome book. about a pandemic virus depopulates the world. And then it's sort of like My Little Prairie, and there's a troupe of actors and musicians that travel around. But the plot of the book is what?
We're puzzled by My Little Prairie.
Yeah, it's My Little Pony mixed with Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie.
Wow, it's like two things like girls like, just children that we weren't really into.
Hello Kitty just for fun.
Yeah. Where's the strawberry shortcake?
You guys know me very well. like Little House on the Prairie. And they travel. They're a traveling troupe, and they go around performing Shakespeare and performing music. But what the plot does very, very interestingly, it ties together characters and stories from before the pandemic and in the world after the pandemic, where there's no technology. And the things that ties them together is actually a comic book that one of the characters was writing before the pandemic hits. It's very interesting, and I think it's cool that it's on Amazon's best science fiction of the month or the year or whatever, because it's being promoted as a literary novel, and I'm thinking, like, you know, if a quote-unquote science fiction writer wrote the same plot, you know, it probably wouldn't get the credit and the accolades that it has been getting this year. But I'm reading it, and it's really good.
It was
Station
National,
11.
National Book Award finalist, wasn't it?
Got a lot of boring middle-brow book lists, right? It'll be on it, but it does have my endorsement of being pretty good.
Made the My Little Prairie reading list, so.
The Rainbow Bright Award.
So, the world after the pandemic is not Mad Max world. It's more like frontier world. So there's still like people who want to rob people and things, but you know, there's like that dystopian, like society has collapsed and now it's all, you know, Walking Dead or 28 Days Later or Mad Max. It's not that kind of world post-technological collapse. It's a little more peaceful. So far, I still have half the book to go. But Crystal, what's tickling your fancy?
I just love his tendency of recommending books he hasn't finished. If that ending sucks, then you're on the hook next week.
Okay, so no, I'm gonna address this issue.
Oh, okay.
Because I typically, though I defend genre fiction very much, it is not what I prefer to read. I prefer to read literature. And much like my friend and colleague Jesse, I care about the prose of a book. And the plot in Station 11 is something that I believe many science fiction authors have written in the past. But in my experience reading, and I read the award winners and they come out every year, the science fiction award winners, the science fiction writers often do not have as good of prose as the quote-unquote literary authors. Now, much like the Red Bull I'm drinking,
I've discovered this too recently, it
could be psychosomatic. It could be that the marketing works, that they're just like teasing my brain and, you know, it's working, that, oh, this is a literary novel, so I think the prose are better. Mm-hmm. But that usually my experience has been that the prose aren't that good. And there is one author, I'm not going to name him again because I've been picked on because I've talked about a lot of his books.
But okay, Dick.
No, that's not him, actually. But he falls into the same category, is that really a lot of good, interesting ideas, but written poorly. What I like about this book is it's written very well, but has a lot of fun science fiction ideas, too. So I don't care how it ends. There's no way for it to end bad, unless it would just get really stupid. I mean, I don't care about the plot. I think I've brought this up in the past when we talked about mysteries. I said, you know, I don't care who the killer is because I'm the killer. So.
That's true.
But that's just me as a different kind of reader. But I understand other folks aren't that way.
I've noticed that. I used to read exclusively science fiction for most of my life. Then recently, it's like I just noticed that it's always written really badly. It's like written by engineers for engineers. So, like, you know.
For instance, Kim Stanley Robinson.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why don't you just read a science book?
Like, I've read some of his.
Yeah. Like, you know, so.
I can get a textbook and be happy.
Yeah. This is an example. Yeah. Anyway, Crystal.
That's like, Crystal,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Okay.
You're still here?
Off
what?
On My Little Prairie.
Take
there. All right. Tickling My Fancy is a new coffee table book called Jimmy Page by Jimmy Page. He's put together a picture autobiography of his life and music from his boyhood to today. It includes his time in the Yardbirds, of course, Zeppelin, the Coverdale Page era, and lots of other stuff in between. It also includes my favorite photo of him, that iconic shot of him backstage guzzling a bottle of Tennessee's own Jack Daniels. It's a must for a Jimmy Page fan, Zeppelin fan, music fan, etc. All right, Mike.
I figured I'd say some sort of runner-up to the musical interlude from earlier. I only listened to this genre of music for pretty much most of the summer, So now everybody can make fun of me, oh boy. So I mentioned in a previous episode that I played Assassin's Creed 3, but eventually it kind of sucked. A great beginning, then we get saddled with a protagonist that has the charisma of a bag of wet sand. That was awful. Every line reading was like, I'm going to stab you to avenge my mom, I guess, whatever. After that, I was like, maybe I should give this series a pass, but then Assassin's Creed 4 came out. Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, the all-pirate edition. Pirates, I love me some pirates. In Grand Theft Auto, you can turn on the radio and if you steal a car and listen to licensed music. But in Black Flag, whenever you go to see your loyal pirate crew sings an assortment of sea shanties. Oh yes, I spent most of the summer listening to sea shanties in my car and singing along so loudly that my throat hurt. It was good times, screaming at the top of my lungs. Early in the morning. One perk of the sea shanty is that since they're all in the public domain, there are dozens of recordings of every conceivable one. My favorite one is High Barbary, or the Coast of High Barbary. Very good stuff. It ends with the pirate ship sinking. It's pretty awesome. Anywho, there's a good one version on Freegal, sung by Dick Wilder on his album Bad Men, Heroes, and Pirate Songs and Ballads. He is almost comically masculine. If you think I could go deep, this guy goes about 12 octaves deeper. It is pretty awesome.
There were two lofty ships from old England came. Blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. One was the Prince of Luther and the other Prince of Wales, sailing down along the coast of the High Barbary. Aloft there, aloft, our jolly boatswain cries, blow high, blow low, and so sailed we. Look ahead, look astern.
It's like, whoa, dude. Awesome, good stuff. We have books on sea shanties, too, if you're into that sort of thing.
No one wants to read about sea shanties. You don't sing sea shanties.
Aye. You go to sea with the sea shanties, matey. Yar. What be your tickling fancies? Hurrah.
Not much tickling my fancy these days, since I'm finishing up my semester this year. I got 2 weeks left, so
that ought to be tickling your fancy.
That's right. Yeah,
not tickling too much.
Congratulations.
She's like, that's grinding my fancy.
It is. It really, really is. I guess book wise, yeah, there's not much. I'm saving that for Christmas. Movie wise, I did see Horrible Bosses 2, the sequel recently. I definitely recommend. I laughed the entire movie. I think it's better than the first one. Music-wise, since I had such a hard time narrowing down my three, I thought I'd do a couple other shout-outs. Mickey Echo, which is, I guess he's not necessarily a Nashville native, but Nashville transplant. Best known for Rihanna's single, Stay, but he's got a pretty good album out himself. I recommend that one, and of course Fantagram. I wanted to throw them in my top three, but could not. Their new album, Voices, it's just Voices. That's their new album for this year. I would definitely recommend that. Fall in Love's pretty fun. Another good running song, but definitely more electronic pop that music's going to today.
Corrections! I said that James Beard should put that he is the king of cooking on his CV, but Mr. Beard has been dead since 1985.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just thought that was fun.
well, I was going to bring it up, I think, but I'll just let you roll with it.
Yeah. Well,
the zombie James Beard.
I knew that, and I was going to be like, well, really, he should put it on
breeds.
His... I was going to say, really, he should put it on his tombstone, but just never got around to it. And I went back and listened. I was like, yeah, it sounds like he's still alive, but he's not.
No, he's not. Hasn't been.
When Jeremy was talking about Sega was doing anything it could to break into Nintendo's market share, he said Sega twice as if Sega was trying to eat into its own market share. Mm. And I believe he meant to say that Sega would do anything it could to cut into Nintendo's market share. But ironically, if you know anything about the book he was talking about, Console Wars, Sega does kind of eventually eat its own tail in its fanatical attempt to outdo Nintendo. So it was actually kind of appropriate. Now, Mike, you very courageously, admirably said that you had a correction.
Oh, right. Well, I got to start listening to Serial like everybody else. And a couple episodes ago, I mentioned that we had a book on it. We don't. There is no book on it. So I'm a lying liar.
Of the case that the first season of Serial is
yes.
about. So actually, I do know about that case, and I'm not listening to Serial because I know about the case. Am I missing out?
I think things are developing, like, even now. I think they're working on the next episode. So I don't think if you get on the internet necessarily you're going to be spoiled. At least that's my understanding.
I heard that there's a lot of things that they haven't mentioned yet, like appeals trials and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, right. I haven't, like, totally spoiled myself, but I've heard that they're out there. There's some Reddit thread that's supposed to be...
I see.
Spoiler-tastic, which I've skipped.
So do you think he did it?
I don't know. It's like, well, if Jay did it, then why would he have done it? There's, like, no motive.
Right.
People just kill for thrills sometimes. And for more information, you can go to...
www.library.com.
Nashville.org. And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week, best movies of the year.
Ooh.
Is what you've all been waiting for.
The exciting one.
I've seen like twos of them.
I've seen like 260.
Of course, the way things are technologically going today, this probably isn't even recording. All right.
Oh, the irony.
Oh, yeah.
What? Icing on the
table.
Mm-hmm.
So,
man, I could have bumped the table the whole time.
Whatever.
Music.
Why are we even here for?
We would never do that.